Good morning, and welcome to the SMTC First Quarter 2019 Results Conference Call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing star zero on your telephone keypad. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To ask a question, you may press star, then one on your telephone keypad. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. Please note that this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Blair McInnes, Vice President of Finance. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Before we begin the call, I'd like to remind everybody that the presentation will include statements about expected future events and financial results that are forward-looking in nature and subject to risks and uncertainties. The company cautions that actual performance will be affected by a number of factors, many of which are beyond the company's control, and that future events and results may vary substantially from what the company currently foresees. Discussion of the various factors that may affect future results is contained in the company's annual report on Form 10-K, Form 10-Q, and subsequent reports on Form 8-K and other filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission. All forward-looking statements are made as of the date of this call, and except as required by law, we do not intend to update this information. This conference call will also be available for audio replay in the Investor Relations section of SMTC's website at www.smtc.com. SMTC will be participating in the B. Riley FBR Annual Investor Conference on May 22nd in Los Angeles and the 16th Annual Craig-Hallum Institutional Investor Conference on May 29th in Minneapolis. Information about these events has been posted on the Investor Relations section of our website. I will now pass the call over to Eddie Smith, SMTC's President and Chief Executive Officer.
Thank you, Blair, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Eddie Smith, SMTC's President and Chief Executive Officer. On this call today is Rich Fitzgerald, our Chief Operating Officer, and Steve Wozniak, SMTC's Chief Financial Officer. As the press release we issued yesterday indicates, we got off to a strong start to 2019. Steve will discuss our financial results for the first quarter and provide our guidance for 2019. After Steve's review of the numbers, I'll come back and offer my thoughts on the progress made and priorities on our continuing journey to make SMTC into a company that delights our customers and delivers increasing shareholder value. With that, Steve Wozniak.
Thank you, Eddie, and good morning, everyone, and thank you for taking the time to join us. As Eddie mentioned, we will start the call with my review of the quarter's financial results, and then I'll turn the call back over to Eddie for his comments. To frame my discussions on financial results, as with the year-end results call, I'll be referencing numbers for 2019, which includes SMTC plus MC Assembly combined. Also 2018 year-over-year, which includes, as previously reported by SMTC, which, as a reminder, includes MC Assembly from acquisition date of November 9, 2018. And then finally, when you hear the word pro forma, this will include SMTC and MC Assembly numbers, assuming MC Assembly was, part of SMTC in the first quarter of 2018. So with that, hopefully we frame a dialogue that we can understand each other on this call this morning. That said, our revenue for the first quarter was $102.6 million, up $65.5 million, or 177%, compared to $37.1 million in the first quarter of 2018. On a pro forma basis, again, assuming MC Assembly had been part of SMTC in the first quarter of 2018, revenue increased 45% from $70.7 million in the first quarter of 2018. Approximately $3.8 million of revenues reported in the first quarter of 2019 was due to the impact of the revenue accounting standard ASC 606 compared to $1.7 million in revenues in the same period in the prior year. During Q1 of 19, we had one 10% plus customer. Moving on, our gross profit for the first quarter was $8.6 million, or 8.4% of revenues, compared to $3.9 million, or 10.4% of revenues in the same quarter of 2018. The year-over-year decline in the GAAP gross margin percentages was primarily due to the higher labor charges in Q1 2019 and a $1.8 million non-cash expense for the amortization of intangibles with the MC Assembly acquisition. In April, we implemented steps, which Eddie will discuss further in a few minutes, to address the higher labor costs, and we expect to see a rebound in our gross margin percentage as we progress through the year 2019. Above said, our adjusted gross profit was $10.5 million, or 10.2% of revenue, compared to $3.5 million, or 9.6% of revenue, for the same period last year. Going below the gross margin line, selling, general, and administrative expenses were $6.7 million in Q1 of 2019, or approximately 6.5% of revenue, compared to $3.5 million, or about 9.5% of revenues recorded in the same period of 2018. The year-over-year dollar increase was primarily a result of the acquisition of MC Assembly. Net income in the first quarter of 2019 was $1.2 million and included $624,000 of restructuring charges and a $3.1 million non-cash gain from the reversal of a prior quarter's accrual for a contingent consideration related to MC Assembly acquisition. In comparison, the company reported a small $8,000 net income in the same period a year ago. Adjusted EBITDA increased 494% to $5.5 million in the first quarter of 2019, compared to $922,000 in the same period a year ago. The large increase in the first quarter adjusted EBITDA compared to the same period in the prior year was due to a 177% increased revenue from both SMTC and MC customers. Now, before I turn the call back to Eddie, I'd like to comment on the balance sheet and a few other key financial metrics. At the end of the first quarter, we had $1.6 million in cash. Our important cash-to-cash cycle remained strong at about 66 days, and we generated $2.8 million in cash from operations during the first quarter of 2019. Net debt at the end of the first quarter was $95.9 million and includes debt incurred in November 2018 associated with the financing of MC Assembly acquisition of $50 million of Term A and $12 million of Term B debt, and $16.5 million of finance and operating lease obligations, of which 5.4 of that 16.5 represents increases in operating leases or right-to-use liabilities associated with the adoption in January 1, 2019 of the new lease accounting standard ASC 842 for leases. In comparison, net debt at the end of 2018 was $92.3 million. Net debt at the end of the first quarter, net debt excluding these financial and operating lease obligations, was $79.4 million as of March 31, 2019, as compared to $80.8 million at the end of 2018. During the first quarter, we filed an 8-K noting we sought a waiver from lenders associated with covenants on our senior debt. That said, higher than anticipated levels of revenue, together with strong collection activities in the first quarter of 2019, eliminated the need for the senior debt leverage covenant waiver that we secured during the quarter. As I indicated, we generated $2.8 million from cash from operations in the first quarter of 2019. Most importantly, our cash-to-cash cycle was 66 days compared to 67 days in the prior quarter, with DSOs at 58 days and DPOs at 73 days. Inventory turnover on an annualized basis was 4.5 times for the first quarter of 2019. Finally, costs associated with identified costs to implement our acquisition synergies should be cleared by the end of Q2, reducing the need in the second half of the year to devote any cash to these acquisition or integrated related activities. As Eddie will highlight, we are very focused on improving our efficiencies, particularly within our newly acquired MC Assembly facilities, as well as reshaping our balance sheet to provide the flexibility and added growth capacity. We are currently evaluating a number of alternatives, which Eddie will again outline in his comments, and we will provide an update at the appropriate times. While we do not plan to provide quarterly guidance, we believe sharing our expectations for the full year provides increased insights to possible results in the combined SMTC-MC company as integration activities complete and further efficiencies are realized during 2019. We are off to a strong start and see a great funnel of business opportunities ahead of us. That said, for the full year, we are currently forecasting revenues in the range of $393 to $408 million. That is up 85% from the midpoint of our guidance from $216 million SMT reported in 2018. If we compare the midpoint of $345 million which assumes MC Assembly had been part of SMTC for the full year during 2018, our guidance on the top-line revenue of $393 to $408 represents a 16% increase year-over-year improvement. As we implement operating efficiencies that I briefly mentioned, and Eddie will, again, discuss in more detail, we expect an improvement in our adjusted EBITDA from $10.2 million in 2018 to between $27 to $29 million in 2019, continuing our expansion of adjusted EBITDA to approximately 7% of revenues at the midpoint of our guidance that I just provided to you in 2019. And it's a level which we believe positions SMTC in the top quartile of our operating performance metrics relative to our peers in the EMS market. Now, with those comments, I'd like to hand the call back to Eddie and provide some additional comments before we plan to open for questions. Thank you again.
Thanks, Steve. As the numbers that Steve presented indicate, we continue to make solid progress in building a stronger SMTC. I'll now add some color on the progress made in the first quarter and my priorities for 2019 and our journey of transforming SMTC into a stronger company. First, we are experiencing continued robust top-line growth, which has been accelerated by our acquisition in November last year of MC Assembly. Within the end market of our customers, our industrial, power, and clean tech, retail and payment systems, test and measurement customer sectors all contribute to the strong growth in revenue in the first quarter. While semiconductor capital equipment showed a decline consistent with global trends for first half of 2019, and defense and aerospace experienced strong bid and quote activities, although longer sales cycles to realize awards and associated revenues. The slow start to the semiconductor sector was not surprising, as many in the industry likely double-booked semi orders last year when there was a supply-constrained environment. We expect our defense and aero business to pick up later this year as we are awarded new business in that sector from both existing and new customers. We have posted a slide deck on the investor relations section of our website that provides specific revenue contribution from our various market sectors. With the strong start to 2019, we're anticipating another year of double-digit revenue growth. I'm pleased to report that our growth is being driven by increased business and several new programs at existing customers, plus the addition of new customers. In the first quarter, we were awarded 7 new programs from existing customers, and we also saw growth from these customers in their existing programs. As important, we added 3 new customers in Q1 to our growing customer roster. Second, we continue to make progress with our integration of MC Assembly, and through April have recognized a significant portion of the synergies we expected from the November 2018 acquisition. As Steve alluded, our Q1s were negatively impacted by labor inefficiencies, primarily at our Zacatecas, Mexico facility. We have taken steps in Q2 to address this situation, including a realignment of our workforce and strengthening our leadership on site. A key element of our integration plans involves empowering local site managers to make decisions and focus on programs to improve plant efficiencies. We expect to complete our integration activities by the end of Q2 and have identified additional operational efficiency opportunities that we believe will lead us to exceed our original synergy goals as announced from the acquisition. To date, our actions should result in over $5 million of annualized cost-saving synergies from purchasing and operational advantages and corporate and shared services redundancies. We remain focused on identifying and implementing additional efficiencies across all 6 SMTC manufacturing sites in its pursuit of achieving best-in-class operating and financial metrics among its EMS peers. Third, we saw a loosening up of the supply chain during the first quarter, which our supply chain team is positioned to leverage. Based on our current forecast, we expect our inventory turns to increase, allowing us to support pursuit of increased business development in the second half of 2019 as new programs enter their startup phases. Which brings me to the fourth and final point I would like to emphasize in today's call, namely our focus on strengthening our balance sheet and further reduce our cash-to-cash days. In addition to being focused on second half of the year on increasing our inventory turns and other operational efficiency opportunities, we're also evaluating alternatives to reshaping and deleverage our balance sheet. To finance our acquisition of MC Assembly, we entered into 2 senior term loans totaling $62 million and a $45 million asset-based line of credit. During Q1, we reduced our senior debt leverage on a trailing 12-month EBITDA basis, assuming projected annualized synergy savings to 3.3 times from approximately 4 times in Q4 2018. At the time of acquisition of MC Assembly, While we have not made any definitive decisions, we are currently examining alternatives that could reduce the cost of debt and provide more flexibility and added growth capacity. Our increasing market value in 2018 and start of 2019 provided an opportunity to step into additional equity shelf filing structures. My strategy and focus to address the high cost of the $12 million of outstanding Term B debt put in place with the acquisition of MC Assembly. To summarize, after operational efficiencies implemented in April that I mentioned relating to our integration of MC Assembly, we believe we have significantly enhanced our capabilities with the acquisition, in particular within the aerospace and defense capabilities, to even better serve our growing base of customers as the steps we've implemented year-to-date kick in. We believe to see accelerating profitability in the second half of the year of 2019. As I look ahead, we are committed to deleveraging our balance sheet, achieving industry-leading performance metrics, growing our business to become the top-tier 3 EMS segment leader, making our company an even stronger company that delights our customers with superior service, taking care of our employees, and rewarding our stockholders with enhanced shareholder value. With that, Steve, Rich Fitzgerald, our Chief Operating Officer, I will take questions from those on the call today. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star, then one on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. If at any time your question has been addressed and you would like to withdraw your question, please press star, then two. At this time, we will pause momentarily to assemble our roster. The first question comes from Mike Crawford from B. Riley FBR. Please go ahead.
Hi, Eddie and Steve. Thanks for that info. What can you tell us about these three new customers in Q1? And then the second part of that is how will the ramp of new programs with these customers affect margins, sounds like, in the second half?
Yeah, so obviously, you know, as you ramp up customers, you get the factories get more efficient, right? Because you don't have to pay for the lights, you don't have to pay for your overhead costs a second time. But what we have found over the last year is ramping them up is not an overnight process, even though I'd like it to be. So I think you'll see, you know, Q3, Q4 revenue starting to be positively affected by these programs. But the other part of that is, of the three, one of them is a defense aero customer, and those take even longer. So I'd expect significant revenue probably Q1 of next year. We'll do the qualifications, Q2, Q3. We'll go through that process. And then, you know, Mike, I think Q1 will have significant aerospace and defense revenue there. So we're also expanding our aerospace and defense customers in our Melbourne plant. And that's going pretty well. And so I would also think the second half of the year, primarily late Q3, early Q4, we should see existing customers growing, kind of like what we did at SMTC. First, you know, get the company to operationally be efficient. Rich has done a great job with the MC facilities. And then start winning new programs within your existing customers. And then, you know, adding some others. So we kind of slowed down the amount of new customers we picked up, Mike, just because as we work through the efficiencies and work through, you know, reshaping the debt and the balance sheet. But no doubt those three customers are customers we want and we're excited about.
Okay, thanks, Eddie. And then, you know, I also think that you get better at manufacturing a product after you get your hands on it for a little while. And is that process any different, you think, with the seven customers where they've now given you new SKUs to manufacture, or is it about the same with the new customers and new products with existing customers?
No, that's a good point. The if it's a reiteration of an existing customer, it happens pretty quickly. But if it's a totally new new product within an existing customer, it's like adding a new customer. You're not very efficient at first. Then you start getting a little more efficient. And normally after 9 months to 12 months, then you're very efficient and you're making pretty good money on that product.
And so of those seven expansions, are any of those fall into that latter category?
Yeah, most of them fall into new products within an existing customer. We've really been targeting getting new products, not just reiterations of our old products. So I'm very excited about the second half of the year and those type of things. No doubt about it. Also, the supply chain loosening up as much as it has over the last 3 months, I think that will speed up some of that, Mike, and maybe we'll see, in Q3 some pretty exciting things. But no doubt by Q4 it'll be very exciting.
Okay, thanks. Just two more, if you don't mind, quickly. Is there any particular aspect of the supply chain that's loosening, like capacitors, or is it just more broad-based?
Yeah, it's funny you say that. So I was just at EDS, which is the Electronic Distribution Show, on Monday and Tuesday, and I met with many executives over those 2 days. Capacitors are now being the orders are being taken, and they're not on allocation anymore, even though lead times seem to be out still. But certain capacitors are down to a normalized 10 or 12 weeks, depending upon case size. So capacitors, I think you're starting to see some loosening up there. I think the automotive capacitors are still very tight in some specific markets. And overall, unless you have sensors, most of the semiconductor guys are loosening up quite a bit. I think that has to do with Asia significantly. The book-to-bill in Asia is negative, obviously, and Asia softening, which has helped the supply constraint.
Okay, thanks, Eddie. And then last question, maybe more for Steve, is you've talked about your capital structure, and is it fair to say that it's just this $12 million term B that's the primary thing you're looking to address, given the probably unnecessarily high coupon of just that small $12 million piece?
I think, Mike, it's clearly our first priority. As we go through this and see other opportunities, we may go further, because there's really two things we're trying to do here. It's trying to restructure it so that we can eliminate the term B, and on the same path, how do we provide more capacity in the working capital to grow the business as we look towards second half of the year in 2020? One of the reasons we have a number of 393 to 403 in our forecast is that we really have some constraints around how much we can grow with the current debt structure, the debt leverage ratios and things like that. So as we go forward, I can't tell you that the term B would be the only thing, but that's our first priority and our highest priority in the near term. But we also want to prepare for next year as we start to look to grow the company organically with additional working capital capacity.
Yeah, Mike, I'll add one little bit. The term B is dictating the terms for the other part of the loan. So it's clear to us we need to clean up the term B specifically so that we can change the terms and conditions on the ABL and the other part of the term. So I think that the way it'll look at some point was we'll still have an ABL, we'll still have a smaller term, and we won't have a term B. So I think you're right in the question. We're very focused on a term B so we can change the structure of the ABL and the rest of the term.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, guys.
The next question comes from Lucan Davenport, who is with retail. Please go ahead.
Morning.
Morning.
So I have a couple questions. The first one kind of follows up on the last caller. On the November 7th call, there was a question asked about the rights offering and if that had brought in everything. And the response was that you didn't foresee the need today, back in November, the way the company was structured, and also that there was no need for working capital to be deployed in the near future in terms of equity. But then, obviously in March, the shelf filing was kind of unexpectedly filed at the last, I'm not sure where that came from, but it was filed kind of unexpectedly, at least to me. So can you elaborate on that a little bit, why there seemed to be a disconnect, or am I just misunderstanding that?
Nope. I think you're very accurate in what we said on November 9th, but November 9th, we hadn't bought MC Assembly. We hadn't grown 55% year on year. So obviously that requires more working capital. We live in a world that obviously, AR and inventory is important. So with the acquisition of MC, we clearly had to take on a different type of debt which on November 7th we hadn't closed a deal, and it may never have closed. It, as you know, in any deal until it's closed, it's not closed. So at that point, we had already worked out with our lenders to increase our ABL, but when we changed to an acquisition, that changed things. The reason we filed an S3, many companies file shelf S3s, and the reason we did it at that particular point is our stock was over $4.76, which got us out of the baby shelf rules. So we decided that that was a good time for us to file a shelf, and it went through the SEC. So at the time, November 7th, we were very accurate. We didn't need that to continue to grow our existing business the way our business was structured at that moment. Clearly, doubling the size of our business in one acquisition is transformative, and when that happens, things happen. At the same time we did that, Lucas, we also grew the business year on year, as you heard by the numbers, quarter on quarter, Q1 combined entity to Q1 combined entity by 40-some percent. If I was to predict on November something of last year that we were going to grow 40-some percent in the middle of a merger, I probably would have been, people would have said, you're absolutely out of your mind. And so the reality is business changes, things change. We made an acquisition, we grew it at a rate that was 4 to 5 times the industry average growth. So growing 4 to 5 times and doing an acquisition that doubled the size of the company changed what we needed to do. We did the shelf for a big number. We don't need that big number, but we did that because we were advised by many people that if you're going to do a shelf, do it for a certain number. But the reality is, as Mike asked in the call question before, really our focus is a much smaller number so that we can restructure our debt. And you can read into that we're very focused on our very high cost Term B loan.
So just to follow up on that, when do you expect or when can it be expected that the debt will come down to maybe, say, around $50 million? This completely outstanding. Can you like estimate that?
I wouldn't even estimate that, because if I grew at the rate I'm growing right now, obviously it takes more working capital to grow at that rate. So $50 million number is not the strategic number. What's more important to me is that we continue to take our debt leverage ratio down below 3, and I'm attempting to do that before the end of the year. That's my goal, is to be under 3 times leverage before the end of the year. Right? If I'm a $1 billion company by the end of the year, $50 million. If I'm $500 million, $50 million would not make any sense. So it's really not a number for me. It's a ratio of the debt leverage for the company. And right now, as you could see, from Q4 to Q1, we went from four times leverage to 3.3 times our senior leverage. It's going down. I know that people think, hey, it's usually leverage. But if we continue to have free cash flow the way we're doing now, continue to pay our debt down, by the end of the year, I feel very good. We'll be below 3, and we'll be in a very reasonable space. If you look at our space, and when they do acquisitions in the EMS Tier 3 space, normally that leverage stays pretty high for a while. We actually, in 1 year, will get it down to a very reasonable level. So I am very comfortable with where we are and what we have, the plans we have going forward. I also know we filed a very big shelf, and that got people's attention. We do not plan to use the whole shelf. We did that as a mechanism. If there was something that was really exciting out there, that we would take a look at it.
I think, Lucas, too, this is Steve Lucas. The other stat that is one that we measure quite frequently for working capital efficiency that complements the debt levels is the cash-to-cash cycle. So we're at about 66 days today. As we go, which is far better than the industry average. Many companies are in the 80s. So we have about 66 days of cash to cash, which means when we buy inventory versus ship and collect our receivables and pay our payables, we're at 66 days cash to cash cycle. Our goal is to certainly bring that down further, but we monitor that daily, weekly from that perspective. So that's in terms of a complement hand to hand with debt. The cash-to-cash cycle is an important stat as well to keep an eye on.
Okay, thank you. And just one last question is, it seems like you're being very, I'm just reading into this, so tell me if I'm wrong, very conservative with the future projections for revenue. Is that accurate? It's hopefully going to be higher than what you're projecting it'll be, because it seems to me just over, if you just, you know, I think it's like $400 million for the entire year, if I remember reading it. But that's approximately the same number for this quarter. So am I being right about that? It's a very conservative estimate.
I think there's a couple things. I don't use the word conservative. I use the word thoughtful. We're using that projection for different reasons. One is we're squeezing our working capital right now, trying to take the debt leverage ratio down. So we're taking our inventory down. We're being efficient with our working capital. I want us to get more efficient. Right now, it's not the time to continue to grow our top line just to grow it. We want to become more profitable, more efficient. And so some people may say conservative. I would say prudent or very thoughtful.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Luke.
The next question comes from Christian Schwab from Craig-Hallum Capital Group. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. Great start to the year. Can you, Steve, just walk through the drivers that are going to cause gross margins to improve throughout 2019?
Yeah, there's a couple things, Christian. Thanks for your question, and thanks for joining the call. As Eddie commented, we really had some labor inefficiencies in one of the plants, the new plant, Zacatecas. That's a fairly large plant for us, so in terms of percentage of production, it's clearly double digits. You know, it's probably in that 30-35% of our total production. So we had some labor inefficiencies in the first quarter, getting our hands around the new site. And Rich has implemented actions in the first 2 weeks of April to correct some of that going forward. So the biggest increase we'll have is around regaining some labor efficiencies in Zacatecas, which mirror what we do in other facilities. So Rich is very disciplined about his percentage of labor on revenue, on production, and we'll get back there with the Zacatecas plant from that perspective. And then I'll ask Rich to maybe join as well to give us a comment or two in terms of, because he's very detailed, Christian, as you probably know by now, in terms of where we're moving that gross margin and what are the key drivers to move that beyond just direct labor. Rich.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it. So very specifically to Zacatecas, some of the challenges that we were faced with when we did the acquisition and we took it over were some new growth customers, as Eddie talked about, and onboarding those customers. There were six customers that were put into the business between Q4 and Q1 that caused some inefficiencies. There were also some accelerated cost challenges that the factory was faced with around equipment maintenance and things like that we've actually corrected. In addition, I think you heard Eddie and Steve both talk about some accelerated operational efficiencies that we implemented in April of this year that will actually help prop up the gross margins in the business, very specifically around Zacatecas and that factory, because it is a large-scale factory for us. But in addition to that, some of the other efficiencies that we actually built in as part of the synergies were actually implemented between March and April as well, which will help prop up the gross margins, as Steve talked about.
Okay, that's fantastic. As we go on a more of a longer term outlook, your 10-15% continuation of top line revenue growth over medium to long term that you've highlighted, Eddie, can you talk about which sectors you feel you have the greatest opportunity for top-line revenue growth, either expansion with existing customers or new customers on the industry sectors that you broke out, and thank you for that level of detail as well.
Sure. Clearly, for us, we're already deep in the test and measurement space, and that is going to continue to grow. That's growing much quicker than any other market we have right now. Also, the payment system marketplace, we're pretty big in the secured payment systems, and that marketplace is growing. Clearly there's pieces of the market that concern me. The semiconductor equipment side of the market, capital equipment, has clearly not been as robust as it had been previously, and I think that hangover is going to be a little longer term. I think it'll actually be 2020 before that market gets back to a reasonable. But what excites me most long term is, Christian, is the defense and aerospace market. You know, when we got here, that was single-digit market share that we were in for us. That will clearly, next year in 2020 and late 2019, get into the double digits and start driving some really good gross profit margin business and some, you know, very outstanding business. You know, we do that in our Melbourne, Florida plant predominantly. We have plenty of room to expand there with putting very little capital into that plant, so we have quite a bit of capacity. And so the reality is we're really going to grow in, I think, the payment, test, and measurement. Some people, you know, those are industrial markets clearly, and I think defense and aerospace long-term is going to be extremely exciting. For us, we're quoting business that's just incredible when you hear the numbers in the defense and aerospace part of the business, but it takes a long time to go from quote to win to fruition. But we are right now doing some qual builds for different customers. We also announced last year that we were a direct supplier to the government, and we haven't even built our first board for the government, and we're going through that qualification process. And so we'll start seeing revenue for that either late Q4 or early Q1. So that'll be another growth for our 2020 year. So I would say short term it's going to be test and measurement, payment systems, longer term, and much bigger will be defense and aerospace.
And then lastly on that, Steve, I would assume your margins in those businesses are similar to other contract manufacturers, which would be, you know, some of your most profitable customers that you deal with, other than potentially some in the medical space. Is that fair to say as well?
It is, and I think the other thing to emphasize that, Christian, so clearly that's one of the drivers of the acquisition of MC Assembly is we looked at our, you know, as we've told you before, we looked at, you know, 20-plus very crisply on who we would target to acquire. So that was one of our key points. The other is with the backgrounds of Eddie and Rich in that space, we've got the historical competencies in terms of quality and how to do the, you know, how to support the government facilities. Invite you to come down to the Melbourne facility. It's outfitted, and we've made a lot of progress even since the acquisition, outfitted for, you know, all the things that Eddie's talking about, doing some of the qualification builds and things of that nature. So clearly it is from that perspective. And also think back, Christian, when Eddie and Rich came into SMTC, you know, the second half of 17, where the business on an EBITDA basis was running, you know, almost neutral. In Q1 of last year of 18, it was about 3% on revenue. Today, we're 5.5%-ish of revenue. Majority of that comes from margin increases, efficiencies in the factories. And this is the benchmark of Rich in terms of how he runs plants, you know, with the you know, efficiencies in the plant. So we will continue to do that track record along certainly the aerospace defense, but we'll do some of the same in Boston, Zach Attakas, and certainly, you know, keep redoubling back with you know, Chihuahua and Fremont as well. So this is a hallmark of our COO, and we'll continue to emphasize this. So we've got you know, supreme confidence that this is going to show in the numbers, and that's really where the plan gets to the EBITDA of 27 to 29 relative to where we're at today at, you know, 5.5 on a quarterly basis.
Great. No other questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Christian.
Thanks, Christian. Appreciate it.
Our next question comes from Steve Cole from Mangrove. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. Appreciate you taking the call. Let's see. Let me take a second and just talk about the balance sheet for a second, turn to inventory turns. I think, Steve, you mentioned we're 4.5 times. I know, obviously, that number, I would think you'd want to have it up markedly from that. Can you talk a little bit about kind of a trend that we can expect to see on inventory turns and what some of the issues are? Are we having to hold inventory more for some of these military aerospace stuff, or we're holding stuff and not shipping it out, obviously, due to lead times? But what would be a reasonable expectation on where that number goes and how much we can pull out of that?
Yeah, great question, Steve. Now, remember, again, I'm re-emphasizing our COO here, but as we came into the acquisition with SMTC, we were running between 5 and 5.5 turns in inventory, which slowed a little bit last year because of the constraints in the supply chain. So Eddie allowed Rich to go above on some of his inventory buys. So we had Kanbans for some of our key customers to make sure we had the right on-time delivery. As we see two things, and then as we came in the MC acquisition, they historically have run about 4.5 times inventory turns. So as we look forward, we see two things happening. The efficiencies of our processes under Rich around how we plan, procure, and ship our inventory will increase MCs from 4.5, as well as we see supply chain loosening up, as Eddie talked about. So we won't back away from some of the Kanbans we put in place with some of our customers. So we have metrics that we run. You probably see some of the KPIs relative to by customer, by plant, in terms of turns. We anticipate that these turns will move to 5 and maybe be as much as 5.3 to 5.4 as we exit this year of 2019 in terms of our planning process. So, you know, we've got that deep in the, you know, in the scope of how we plan our business. And there's real reasons behind it relative to loosening of the supply chain, as well as inheriting MCs and applying SMTC processes to the MC inventory and procurement process. It now all comes under Phil Worley, who was an SMTC supply chain director. So these are the steps that will come into play, and it happens naturally day in and day out.
Sounds good. Let me ask another question just about it. I know we've got the 6 plants. Understand Zach and Cactus, I think you mentioned. I one of these days I'll actually be able to pronounce that. It may take a couple of years. But when we look at your plants now, are they all profitable, and how are we doing about moving, you know, base loading and moving customers around? I presume that's one of the issues that gives you flexibility now with the acquisition, is you can shift stuff. Is that actually happening, not happening, and what's kind of the plan as we look out for the balance of the year and the next year?
Hey, Steve, I'm going to ask Rich to address that for you, but as soon as you can say Zach Attackus, we're going to ask you to spell it. And it gives you more
time. Yeah, that's probably true.
Especially if we have to name the actual city that it's in, which is called Fredericksburg. But so the neat story is all the factories are profitable. If you remember when we first came in and as a part of the transformation of SMTC, we had some challenges with 2 of our sites. Both those sites are actually profitable now. We've actually done the same on the MC side. Part of the synergies and the operational efficiencies that we put into place have actually created a springboard specifically for the North American sites. So I feel comfortable that they will continue to stay that way. And if I can add, both Eddie and Steve continue to emphasize the military aerospace business for Florida being a key focus for us as we did the acquisition. It is going to continue to be a key focus of mine as well to make sure that we're putting the right operational efficiencies in place, but also putting the right tools, processes, procedures, systems, and controls in place to get to that direct government business, which should prop up the margins as well.
Great. Thank you, Rich. I guess let me talk about Melbourne for a second. I do look forward to seeing it. But can you address the sales? You know, Eddie, you mentioned earlier that this whole idea of bidding, qualification testing, getting the shipment. But that's what, 9 months, right? I mean, if we're looking from start to finish, is it 9 months more or less? And what is the cost that you actually incur that's being expensed during the 9 months? So are we essentially incurring expenses in 19 that will then come through and much better, you know, we'll see a big lift in 20, not only in revenues as that ramps, but those costs are going to disappear. Am I getting that right as you're adding more customers on the qualification testing stuff?
Yeah, so you have the cost up front where you do qual, then you hold some inventory, so it clearly bloats your inventory for a period of time, and you're inefficient your first couple builds. And then you start getting more efficient as time goes on. And so, you know, my answer, Steve, is we've added quite a few customers over the last couple quarters. And as we add these customers, we're a little bit less efficient than I would like us to be. But it's just the fact of the way the whole qualification process and the onboarding of customers go. So yeah, long term we'll be a lot more efficient and have a lot less of these costs. But you know, sometimes in some of the military, they know that it takes a long time, and they'll let you bill them for the excess inventory. They'll let you bill them for some of these costs. But as a general rule, you can't, and you become more efficient over time. So I'm excited that we'll get way more efficient over time. I think Christian Schwab asked the question the right way. It's, you know, as we add these customers and they're in our factories for some period of time, we'll get more and more efficient, and our gross profit margins will move up, and EBITDA will move up with it.
And what is Florida running now, Eddie? So when you look at, you know, Florida's not, obviously we're not running 100% in there. How much of a window of opportunity do we have? And when you look at the contracts that you're going through qual testing now, what is the revenue potential for those in 20?
Yeah, I think, Steve, you'll have to look it up in the 10-K. I don't have it in front of me. And to be honest, we don't traditionally go through factory by factory. So I think you'd have to look in a 10-K for that, or I'll get it for you, and we'll send it to you.
Okay. Fair enough. And okay. I think that's about it. Thanks, guys. Appreciate the time, as always.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
The next question comes from Craig Boots, a private investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering if you could give a little more insight on that shelf that we had talked about here a couple calls ago. What was said already was helpful, but I guess what I'm wondering is, obviously the share price today isn't where we'd like it to be, and I'm hoping that this is not something we have to use anytime soon. We'd obviously be better off if we could wait somewhere down the road when the share price is better. And I'm just wondering if you're able to give a little more insight on how we intend to use the shelf, or maybe a little bit on the timing of it.
Yeah. You know, clearly, as you can read in my compensation, Craig, that any dilution makes it more difficult for me to collect my compensation. And that's with the whole leadership team, Steve and Rich. So we realized the stock price, we realized the S3 filing, the stock was significantly higher. We also realized that the restructuring of our working capital is important. And so, you know, my answer is it's not where I want it to be. So that will take into consideration. We'll take a look at what we're going to do. But as I also said earlier, we filed a bigger shelf than we probably needed, because we were given guidance to do that. We also filed it particularly at that point in time because it got us out of the baby shelf rules. And so right now there's really nothing for me to report on the thing, but as soon as there is, we will.
So I guess if I'm understanding it right, you're probably not intending to use this anytime real soon. Hopefully then when you do use it, the share price will be, you know, considerably better than it is right now. And I guess you had kind of mentioned on that previous call that you'd possibly use it on any future acquisitions, like the one we just did with MC, for instance. I'm just wondering if you could shed more insight on your philosophy, and not so much on the timing maybe, but how you might intend to use it if it's for such a thing as an acquisition.
Craig, I don't plan to talk about timing of anything we plan to do, so I'll leave that with the, as you keep saying, I'm not saying anything. Timing is what it will be the appropriate time. As far as using it for an acquisition, it gives me the flexibility or opportunity when I'm discussing an acquisition with a counterparty that we have a weapon to pay for an acquisition, that we have collateral and it's available to us if we need to do that. And so the fact that people like to remind me of our November 9th, where I said we weren't going to do anything right at that point, and then we wound up buying something and changing what we were going to do. Things change every day in business. Today, I'm not looking at acquisition. I'm looking to integrate the MC Assembly acquisition, finish that up, gather the profitability we should get from that acquisition, and the growth. But, you know, you just never know. So I'll leave it with that. It sits there, but at this point, we don't have any any reason to use that big a S3. So.
Okay, that sounds good. Definitely, I like the results that we've had so far. It's definitely been good as far as I'm concerned. Thank you much.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Craig. And thanks for your long-term support, too. You've been with us since the first call that I've been around, so thank you.
This concludes our question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back over to Ed Smith, CEO, for any closing remarks.
So, thank you, operator. In closing, I want to thank our employees, leadership team, business partners, distributors, and our investors for their support. I look forward to reporting our progress to our various stakeholders over the next several quarters. Thank you for your time and effort today. Have a great day.
The conference has now concluded. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect. Have a good day.